Happy Halloween, you ghouls and goblins, and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. This week, your Extra Movie Butter boys are going to be reviewing the phenomenal box office hit that is Five Nights at Freddy's. And just like Freddy Fazbear, we are going to get a little spooky and a little scary. In our third segment, we're joined by JT's own cousin Chris, who is a huge horror movie fan. So I'm curious to get his take on Five Nights at Freddy's. Now, interesting, Five Nights at Freddy's was released both theatrically, where it did very, very well, but was also released on streaming, which I'm going to pose the question to you guys when it's your time to break down the box office. Do you think that cost some extra money? Because I didn't go to the theaters. I watched this at home. But before we get into that, I do got to welcome my ghouls and goblins, the one and only JTE and the illustrious Benny Hamlin. Happy Halloween, gentlemen.
Happy Halloween Eve, a.k.a. Devil's Night.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Benny's been getting into the ghoulish vodka, I think, a little early, but... Breaking down your box office, Five Nights at Freddy's killed it this weekend. $78 million domestically, $50 million internationally. This movie topped $140 million globally in its first release. Number two, Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, another $14.7 million on the $150 million concert movie that they put out, folks. Killers of the Flower Moon dropped to third place, $9 million. Making its total $40 million domestic on a $200 million budget. Number four, After Death, $5 million. Number five, Exorcist the Believer, $3.1 million. Paw Patrol, The Mighty Movie, still doing well, $2.1 million. Freelance, $2.6 million. Once again, The Nightmare Before Christmas in the top 10 with $2 million. Saw X. And rounding out your top 10 was The Creator with $1 million, $38 million domestic for that one. Still got a little ways to go before it's earning its money back. But speaking of earning its money back, Five Nights at Freddy's cost $20 million to make. They made $130 million this weekend. It was released in theaters and streaming. JT, I'm going to toss it to you because the first question I've got to ask is, do you think they either A, undervalued where this movie was going to land, or B, just wanted to get more eyes on it? Yeah, I feel like it would have cost them more money.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Would it have made a little bit more money? I think so, but I think people at this time of the year want to go to the theater and have that communal experience of a horror film. And I think the reason this movie is so successful is two words, but in reality, it's two letters, I-P. That's why these studios aren't making original movies as much, is because they know they have an IP that's already got a base fan base. They're going to make their money back. $20 million was a very low risk for this film, for something that's so popular. I never really played the video games, Five Nights at Freddy's, but I've heard of it. I know about it. I've seen the toys in Hot Topic. So it definitely has a stamp in the culture. So I'm not surprised. I am surprised it made this much. You know, because I think projections were like 50 million opening maybe, but it went on to make 73 or 80 million, I think, for the weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. I don't think anybody expected that. I don't think Jason Blum expected that. I don't think the director, I don't think Josh Hutcherson expected that. So good for them. You know, and they said they want to make sequels. They were saying they want to make sequels before this movie came out. Guess what? It's going to happen. I don't know. Now I'll be more curious to see if they release the next one, maybe only in theaters, and skip the Peacock, straight to Peacock. That could happen.
I mean, you got to, right? Look, this movie was a huge hit. And I've played the video game like one time and was eaten most of the times I played. But there's a huge lore to this game. And we'll talk about it a little bit more in our third segment. But like, I spent 30 minutes on Friday night talking to my niece who knows everything. Like, she's obsessed with the Five Nights at Freddy's lore, and she couldn't wait to go see this movie in theaters. I even told her, I was like, I don't know if it's any good, but I absolutely think 100% that the next Five Nights at Freddy's or Four Nights at Freddy's, I don't know if it goes up, if it goes down, if it becomes, you have to spend a sixth night or you get less nights the more time you spend with Freddy. But either way, I absolutely think that the next one's going to be theatrically released.
I don't know if it, I mean, if it impacted it, I don't think it would be more than a couple million dollars. Peacock is not something that most people look at as their go-to streaming service. And I don't think most people really knew it was coming out on streaming the same day. And I think most of the people that stayed home and watched it on Peacock were the older skewing adults. Because like when you look at like the demographics of who went out to see this movie, it was really, really young. Like compared to like most blockbuster movies, like this movie skewed way like under age 24. So the only thing I could think of like a comparison to is like in the 80s, something like E.T., which was very like kid, young family driven, you know, and I think this is kind of was like that. So I don't know that it would have made a huge difference, but I definitely think the next time they will not put it on Peacock.
We talk about this a lot, but Blumhouse investing a little, getting a lot back. I feel like this has definitely got to be one of his most profitable movies with a $20 million investment and already at $130 million globally. Not bad to be Jason Blumhouse, right? Or Jason Blum right now. Anything else that stands out to you guys? I mean, everything that dropped seems to have dropped consistently. I mean, Killers of the Flower Moon, I think we all kind of saw that dropping. It dropped 69% from its $29 million debut to $9 million.
I don't think Apple gives a damn. They just want some Oscar nominations and put them up there at all the parties in Hollywood come Oscar season. I really don't think they're like, oh no, it's not making as much money. They're like, this is a generational artist. We gave him the open checkbook. That's all they really care about.
Well, they may change their mind at the stockholders meeting when they have to explain a $200 million loss. But
I would say put out a new pair of iPod headphones and they'll be fine.
JT holds up his new pair of iPod headphones.
Exactly. JT pointing out that he just cost himself a $4 markup next year. I would say that another thing that sticks out is the faith-based movie that came in at number 4.
Yeah.
Afterlife, I think it is. Like outside of Sound of Freedom, which made like $200 million, like even if you take that away, the studio that released that, like they are consistently like every month releasing a movie that lands in the top 5 and hangs around for a while. So they have found like, and I never see marketing for these, and they're being marketed strictly to like a, you know, conservative Christian fan base, which is fine, but they have got that demographic on lockdown. Like seriously, if you go back every single month, they're dropping a movie that'll land $5-10 million and then hang around for like 2 or 3 weeks. And for like a small studio, like marketing strictly to a niche audience, they are crushing it.
And they don't invest a lot into these movies and they get a solid return on them. So yeah, I agree with you on that, Benny. Well, folks, once again, we do have to talk about some sad news. And I think this one hits a little bit harder to home for probably our audience. And that is the passing of Matthew Perry, who at 54 years old, sadly drowned over the weekend. Everybody knows Matthew Perry as Chandler Bing from the hit TV show Friends. But Matthew Perry also had a decent movie career under his belt. Fools Rush In, The Whole Nine Yards, The Whole 10 Yards. This one always just strikes a fancy for me because I was a huge Chris Farley fan, but he was in Farley's last movie, Almost Heroes.
Yes.
Very sad. I know Matthew Perry had a long history with substance abuse and that took a hold of him a lot throughout his life, but it is very sad because it seemed like he was somewhat turning the right corner. But I don't know if I got the best of them, but we say this every week when we talk about somebody who passed that, you know, it's always sad when talent leaves, and he was about the sharpest and wittiest and funniest guy that you could possibly put on screen. So I will definitely miss him.
Yeah, it's sad. You know, Fools Rush In was a movie I used to watch all the time. One of my favorite jokes is where he goes, "Hi, I'm Chewie." And he goes, "Luke Skywalker." And he's like, "Sorry, you probably get that a lot." I was never a huge Friends person. I was more of a Seinfeld guy in that time. But I did watch it from here and now, and I did enjoy certain episodes. And I always did enjoy his humor. He's, you know, that sarcastic, kind of over-the-top character sometimes. And yeah, but Whole Nine Yards was a movie I really enjoyed. I don't remember the sequel that well. I remember him showing up, of course, Almost Heroes. Love Chris Farley. That was actually directed by Christopher Guest. A lot of people forget that. A legendary comedic director and actor. Yeah, it's just sad. You know, he did definitely had, you know, a lot of substance abuse. And, you know, he did show that wear and tear. Like, he was 54 years old. But if you looked at him, he looked like he could have been 65. Mm-hmm. I think all the, you know, years of abuse definitely took a toll on his body. And we don't know what happened or what it was. Some people say it might have been a heart attack while he was in the hot tub. You know, just, I think, you know, living a life like that for that long is going to have some repercussions. But yeah, he was a great talent, man. You know, he'll always be remembered because Friends will go down as one of the great sitcoms ever.
I always think it's, you know, like last week when we talked about like the passing of Richard Roundtree, you know, that's somebody that, you know, lived into their 80s and, you know, yeah, left a pretty strong legacy. You know, people will always remember Matthew Perry for Friends, but I always feel like he was a lost talent out of all that, because like out of that group, like Jennifer Aniston went on to become a big movie star. Matthew Perry was the most talented out of that group.
Mm-hmm.
He should have went on to become a huge movie star. Like most of the times when he did a movie, he was very good at it. He should have had like that Hugh Grant career where he had like the big bounce off movie and then hung around as like the nice leading man or the creepy old guy. That should have been his career. And, you know, addiction kind of took that away. Like he had a rom-com, I think it was called Three of Hearts with Neve Campbell and Oliver Platt. And it's very dated. It doesn't really hold up culturally, but at the time it was like a great rom-com. And so I think it's always sadder, like when someone passes away when they're only a couple of years older than you, but more so when they passed away and they didn't really live up to their potential. He's someone that could have been, I think, a really big movie star had addiction not gotten the better of him.
That movie Three to Tango that you're talking about, Benny. There's a line in that movie, and I had to look it up because I thought it was so interesting. It was, "What is the most common line spoken in movies?" And that line was, "Let's get out of here." Hmm. And then I looked it up, and that is actually true, because here comes the aliens. Let's get out of here. You know, hey, we're done eating. Let's get out of here. So, yeah, I know the movie you're talking about, Benny. And, man, I haven't seen that one in forever. But it is very sad. It is very sad that addiction did get the better of him. We're hoping. Go ahead, Benny. Sorry.
So, on another note, like, since we're talking Richard Mull, another sitcom actor, he never really did much in movies, but he was in the show Night Court and played Bull. He also passed away this weekend, and he's also someone that I remember very vividly from sitcoms as a kid, so I just wanted to mention him as well. He wasn't as big of a name, but he was definitely someone that stood out if you grew up in the 80s.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I remember Night Court, but the movie House, we talked about House too when we were giving our Halloween like B movie recommendations. He was the villain in House. He played like this evil soldier who came back from the dead to haunt this guy. And he was great in that. He's a character. He's an actor. Like, you maybe didn't always know his name, but when he showed up, you're like, oh, that guy. He was one of the, you know, those guys.
Well, we all will miss Matthew Perry, and, you know, best wishes to go out to his family. But on to hopefully what should be a little bit happier news, and that's the sequel to 2005's Constantine. Francis Lawrence, who directed the original 2005 Constantine, starring Keanu Reeves, recently gave an interview where he started to talk about the new installment and how it wasn't going to take place right after the original one, that we were going to be dealing with a much older Constantine. I mean, listen, Keanu Reeves in his 60s. Don't let like his look fool you. He's in his 60s, folks. So we'll be focusing on a much older Constantine, and, you know, he's DC's resident Hellblazer, and because of that, they're going to give this a very hard R rating. And that's been confirmed. Lawrence is moving forward with this movie. He and Keanu Reeves are writing it collectively, which I find is very interesting as well. So obviously this is a character that Keanu is very close to. Francis Lawrence hasn't given us too much over the last, you know, decade since this movie came out. So obviously this is dear to his heart as well. So hearing all of this, knowing that this is going to be a hard R, it's being written by Keanu and Francis Lawrence, and of course that this is going to be dealing with a older Constantine, does this get your excitement up, Benny?
It does. I mean, you can, there are a lot of flaws with that movie, but it's one of my guilty pleasure superhero movies. I watch it probably every 2 to 3 years, and I think it's fun, man. And so I would like to see them get a shot, you know, with modern technology, you know, with 20 years of hindsight and superhero movies to build on. So like, it's one of those movies, like I'll be there opening day. I don't care. I don't really expect it to be a great movie, but I'm damn sure going to be there opening day and pumped for it.
I'm with you on this one, Benny. I love the movie Constantine. I watched it. God, I watched it like 2 weeks ago. And yeah, the effects don't really hold up too well, but I don't know. I dig it. I love all that supernatural, you know, good versus evil. And Constantine's such a fun character. I understand the criticism, like in the books, he's British and blonde. And you don't get that with Keanu Reeves. But you know what? There's few characters outside of like Neo and John Wick where Keanu Reeves can really like sink his acting chops into, because frankly, the dude doesn't have any. But in this one, he was great. I love him as Constantine. So I'm excited to get a hard R old version of Constantine. JT, how about you, buddy?
I'll be honest. I'm like you guys. I don't think I've seen the original film since I saw it in theaters. And I remember it being pretty forgettable back then, but it has quite a big following. I mean, the fact that they're making the sequel shows you that there is some love for this film. It's one of those movies where I just kind of put in the category of one of the films where Shia LaBeouf plays a, you know, sidekick. Because he did it in iRobot. He did it in Constantine. He did Indiana Jones. Like, he was just the sidekick for a while. And oh, that was one of those, you know, Shia LaBeouf sidekick movies. I'll have to revisit it because I do think Francis Lawrence is a really great visual director. I really enjoyed I Am Legend. I enjoyed his first, you know, Hunger Games and the sequel. I didn't like The Mockingjays. So I'm interested. I'm curious. I'll check it out, but I definitely need to revisit the original before I see this new one, because like you guys, I mean, you say, Benny, you watch it every couple of years. That's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. And they better have the same guy back playing the devil. I can't pronounce that dude's name.
Peter Stormare.
Yes, but that dude was perfectly cast.
Yes.
They have to have that dude back.
Yeah, Stormare was the best part of that movie when he shows up as Lucifer. Oh, yes, so good. Was. So good.
I remember close to nothing of this movie. Like, I just, I remember I saw it one time and nothing stuck with me. So I just have very little memory of the movie. So it'll be like watching it for the first time when I watch it again.
I mean, it is a spooky season and it's filled with spooks. I would highly recommend rewatching Constantine. Well, speaking of Keanu Reeves, former John Wick director Chad Stahelski, I always mess up that name, was given the green light and the keys to the Highlander kingdom. He is going to be remaking the beloved 1980s classic Highlander, and this time scored himself Henry Cavill. No word if he's going to be playing Connor McLeod. I'm sure he is. If you're remaking the Highlander, why wouldn't you? But this director recently gave an interview in which he described this movie as it's going to be John Wick with swords. So I got to turn over to our resident action expert, and that would be the one and only JTE. John Wick with swords.
Oh, what sign me up. I think this is one of those franchises that is in the need of a update. Like, I like the original, you know, I don't think Christopher Lambert's the greatest actor in the world. I think, you know, his career after that kind of is the evidence in that case. So I think with a good actor, a good director, and updated special effects, updated cinematography, because you watch that first film and it feels almost like an independent film at times. It feels very unprofessional and rough around the edges, I guess is the word I would say. While there's some really cool stuff in there, great ideas, like, this is a franchise I think could, if done correctly, could be an awesome, awesome movie. I just love the whole concept. I love the idea. And I feel like when they made it in the past, and never quite lived up to that idea. In the fight choreography alone, just today, compared to what it was back then, it's night and day. So I think Henry Cavill's an interesting choice. He's not quite who I would have seen as the Highlander. And like, who's going to play the Sean Connery role? Is it, I'm guessing that's another question. Is this a complete remake or is it a legacy sequel? Are they going to reference the original movie? Those are all questions I can't wait to have answered. Hopefully in the trailer.
Well, let's see. Henry Cavill's British. So that's much closer to Scotland than Christopher Lambert from France playing a Scottishman. And then you have a Scottishman playing a Spaniard. Let's hope they get a Spaniard.
Exactly. I'm
just crossing this out. Antonio Banderas as the Sean Connery character. Oh, that would be
maybe Javier Bardem.
Ooh, that's good too. Yeah, this sounds like fun. Look, this is a franchise. You get a lot of remakes nowadays, and sometimes they remake movies that you're going, why? This is a franchise that desperately needs a remake. There was one, maybe two decent movies in here. I mean, the first will go down as being the one that has the best soundtrack, right? You had Queen was very prevalent in the first soundtrack of it, but this absolutely can translate. The whole concept of it is very, very fun and very cool. Immortals battling it out to be the last of them. And every time they slain one another, you know, the quickening happens and they gain the other's powers. Yeah. John Wick with swords. Sounds like a ton of fun. Let's do it. Benny, what are you thinking?
Like, I adore the original Highlander. I watch it probably once a year. It's a movie I revisit frequently. I'm with JTE. It's probably not the best done thing on earth. It's very dated. But I've always felt like it was a sleeping giant. Like, I always felt like if you did it and did it right, this movie could be just like a powerhouse franchise. There are so many cool concepts. Like, I even watched the series Highlander, which actually wasn't bad the first few seasons. I just think there's so much that you can do, like, if you do it right. And I don't know, other than that first movie for its time, if it's ever been done well. And it has the most mind-blowing scene, one of the most mind-blowing scenes in the history of cinema. It's that this guy, who's an immortal, that has lived through the major events of humanity for 700 years, is wealthy, has almost unlimited funds, and he's going out and watching a Freebirds match on a Wednesday. And that is one of the greatest ideals in the history of cinema.
Does this open with WWE SmackDown? Or like, how does the opening credits? Is it a UFC fight now, maybe? Maybe UFC gets in there? What's the sporting event the movie starts off with?
I am curious, though, how they handle the Kurgan with Henry Cavill. Because, like, a lot of the first movie is based on, like, Clancy Brown is just so, like, huge and intimidating. And Christopher Lambert is sort of an everyman. Henry Cavill is huge and jacked. So you're going to have to find some way to make someone intimidating to a guy that looks like that. And that's going to be a hard sell.
Get the guy who played Drago's son in Creed 2.
Oh,
he's also in Shang-Chi. That dude was scared of shit at me if he came at me with a sword.
Well, folks, we're going to take a break. In our next segment, though, we are going to discuss our favorite video game movies, because believe it or not, Five Nights at Freddy is based on a video game. Did I just blow your mind? It is Halloween. Stay tuned.
Halloween. I think he'll come back. Halloween, the night he came home. Rated R.
There's a storm at sea.
You're all gonna die.
And it's blowing terror to the Big Apple. Now, the only safe place to be.
You're dead meat! Yo, man, it's cool. It's cool, man. It's cool.
Is out of Dow. Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, rated R. Starts Friday, July 28th at theaters everywhere.
Boo! welcome back to our next segment, which is spooky enough because we're going to be talking about video games that have been adapted to movies. And that's a very short list and not a very good one. I'm going to be going around the horn. Now, in between our takes here, Benny was saying that he went through the list and found himself a couple of great ones. So I got to lead off with Benny. If you have a couple of great video game movies, let's hear it.
All right. Number one, greatest video game adaptation of all time. And I didn't know until today it was a video game adaptation. Werewolves Within, which is okay. A horror comedy starring literally the AT&T girl and a bunch of people you've never heard of. But it is absolutely hilarious. It has a great twist ending. Perfect for the Halloween season. One of the better werewolf movies ever made. And it is hilarious and creepy. Perfect. Watch it tonight. Watch it tomorrow for Halloween. Werewolves Within. Excellent.
I put that one on my list, too. I love that one.
The second one is a movie called Monster Hunter. Now, you have to bear with me on here. It's a Paul W.S. Anderson movie with Mila Jovovich, who is in all of his movies because they're married. But it has Tony Jaa. The movie is way too long. Like, after the natural conclusion of the story, it just keeps going and gets weird for like 30 minutes. But if you just can, if you're able to, in your head, say, okay, the movie ended and stop it and just not watch the rest, it's an excellent sci-fi action movie. There's a lot of cool little monsters, and it's always fun to see Tony Jaa. And number three for me now is Detective Pikachu. So here's the thing. I like Pokemon. When my kid was really little, he got really into Pokemon. I started buying the Pokemon games for him. He gave up on Pokemon after a year, but I kept playing the Pokemon games. They're the only video games that I buy. Now, they chose to adapt the worst possible Pokemon game for their movie because it's an obscure one that no one plays, and it has a terrible story. But they did such a great job in the movie of making the actual Pokemon. So if you're a Pokemon fan, getting to see all of those brought to life, I imagine it's a lot like the people that went out to Five Nights and Freddy's. Like, regardless of the quality of movie, just getting to see these things you've seen in a video game, like, interact with real life, it was such a cool thing to see. So Detective Pikachu, like, Ryan Reynolds is being Ryan Reynolds as he is in every movie, which is always fun. There's a crappy story, but you get to see really cool Pokemon and Ryan Reynolds doing his thing. Now, beyond that, there were no redeemable video game movies, and so I'm going to stop my list at three.
JT, I feel like Mortal Kombat's got to be in your list here. Lay it on us.
I'll say this. I have not seen Werewolves Within. I've heard great things. Oh,
you got
to
see
it. It's streaming. I've been meaning to watch it, just never got around to it. So I'm putting that on my list. Monster Hunter felt like the first 15 pages of a script, and it felt so incomplete. It was like it's almost like a prologue to an actual movie. So I just can't get with that movie. And what was the third one you said?
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, I forgot it about 10 seconds after I left the theater. Here's the thing. Most video game movies are bad. Okay. But can they be bad, but enjoyable? And I give you, of course, one of the most enjoyable video game movies. It's Street Fighter. Jean-Claude Van Damme poked out of his mind. Raul Julia given the last performance of his storied career. It is horrible, Benny, but it's horrible in the best way a video game movie can be horrible. There's really bad video game movies out there that are just unwatchable and forgettable. One thing I'll say after watching Street Fighter, you don't forget it. As a kid, I remember leaving the theater and wanted to do bicycle kicks all day. Baraka, his whole story was insane. At some point, there's a guy with boxing gloves for no reason fighting a sumo wrestler. It was just, I rewatched it for the first time maybe a year ago in a long time. And I had fun. I had a good time because it was so ridiculous. And it does feel like it knows how bad it is. You're watching, and Raul Julia is just eating up the scenery. So I got to put Street Fighter in there. It's a good time. Have some drinks. Have some friends over. I guarantee you're going to have a good time watching that movie. And Moose, yeah, you hit a nail on the head. I think Mortal Kombat is still probably the best video game adaptation to a movie. I think the first one, you know, the 90s film, that's a very fun movie. The new one that just came out at times was a little bit too serious, and I felt like the budget felt like it held it back a lot. It felt like a lower budget film, and I think for Mortal Kombat to be done right, it needs a bigger budget, maybe a more creative eye behind the lens. I mean, this is the same guy who directed Monster Hunter. Benny, tell me you like the original Mortal Kombat.
I like the original Mortal Kombat. I like the new Mortal Kombat. I even tolerate Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, you know, come on. Annihilation? It's like they went to the desert with three cameras and said, all right, we got to make a movie. They didn't know what they were doing.
I didn't say I want to go back and revisit it. I just said I tolerate it.
You tolerate it. So those are the two that I think that come to my mind first, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. But I think the third one I really enjoy is Silent Hill. It's actually a pretty cool gothic horror film that also happens to be based on a video game and is very close to the source material at times. And it has something that I think a lot of these other movies we talk about don't really have, is a real distinct style. It's directed by Christopher Gans, a French director, who directed one of my favorite films called Brotherhood of the Wolf. Have either of you guys seen Brotherhood of the Wolf?
I don't know if I have. I don't think so.
No, it sounds familiar.
Amazing French film that came out in American cinemas in the early 2000s. It's kind of a cult hit. They just released it on 4K this year. It is an amazing movie. I highly recommend you check it out. It is pretty long. It's almost 3 hours long, but it is a period piece / monster movie / martial arts movie. It's like three different genres that you wouldn't think would mesh together, but it works so beautifully. So I'm going to throw Silent Hill some love. I can't wait to hear what you got, Moose. What do you got?
I also had Werewolves Within and Detective Pikachu on my list. I think Werewolves Within. It's funny because until I started going through like the Wikipedia for video game adaptations, I didn't know that was a video game either. So I highly encourage you, if you've not seen that, JT, please watch that. I'd love to get your perspective on that. But I'm with Benny, like only the opposite with Pokemon. I know nothing about Pokemon, like nothing. Like I know Pikachu and then Charizard. And the only reason I know that is because when I'm driving and I see groups of people still playing Pokemon Go, I roll down the window and I yell, there's a Charizard right there, just to distract them. But I thought it was a charming movie. I included the Super Mario Brothers movie, not the 1997 classic. The most recent one that came out this year, I thought it was incredibly charming. And I know Chris Pratt's new career is just basically providing voiceover work, but that's fine. I was all for it. Jack Black as Bowser was awesome. And then, come on, Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong. You don't get a better Donkey Kong than Seth Rogen. Like, it was almost like him being cast as Pumbaa and Rocksteady. Like, he's just perfect as those voice roles. So, I don't know. I really dug the newest Super Mario Brothers movie. I've watched it a couple times at this point in time, and I just think it's charming. With that little weird star that's in the prison, and they're, you know, just keep swinging back and abandon all hope. It's like happy, but yet super depressing. I don't know. It worked for me. The one other one I'll give like an honorable mention to is The Tomb Raider with Alicia Vikander.
Ah, okay.
It's a fun action movie. Alicia Vikander is one of those actresses that I'm like, what happened there? She was an Ex Machina, killed it, won the Oscar, went on to play Lara Croft in Tomb Raider. I was like, okay, there's your big budget. And then where has she gone?
Yeah, she was in The Danish Girl. I think she got nominated for supporting in that. And I don't think Tomb Raider did great at the box office. I think it was a little bit of a disappointment.
I think that's where she went.
They've been talking, I think, about doing another one, but haven't heard anything. In the vein of Tomb Raider, I'll give an honorable mention to Uncharted with Tom Holland. Mm. Not a great movie, but perfectly passable as an Uncharted film, an origin film specifically. I rewatched it again last year because I think I got the 4K at like for like $5 somewhere. And I was like, yeah, I'll give it another watch. And I thought the chemistry with him, Mark Wahlberg, was actually really good. And watching it again, it's a fun, you know, hour 45 minutes. It's not amazing. It's nowhere good as the game. None of these movies are as good as the game. But I think it's a serviceable adaptation with some potential to be better if they do a sequel.
See, if you recast, in my opinion, if you recast Wahlberg and put someone else in the role of Scully, that movie's great.
Well, it should have been Bruce Campbell. A younger Bruce Campbell would have been perfect. But
I think Wahlberg's the worst part of that movie.
Honestly. I don't know. See, I think I thought of that also going in, but I thought they actually played off each other really well. Like they actually had some chemistry. So at the end, when he has the mustache and he's like, looks more like the Sully that we know. And he's like a mustache. He's like, don't worry. It's puberty. You'll get there one day. Like I thought their back and forth was really fun. So I had hope for it. I enjoyed rewatching it. Listen, for just not to be a horrible movie is a success for video game adaptation. We did one earlier this year. I thought Gran Turismo was pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Not great. Yeah. It's pretty good. And I think pretty good is where you want to be because no one has yet to really make it great. I mean, you could argue Super Mario Brothers, the animated film, because it really does have a lot of callbacks to the games. And it feels like the game was just put onto the screen. But a lot of these movies that we're talking about are live action, you know, adaptations. I think the first Resident Evil was probably one of the most successful also. Yeah. But I don't think it's anywhere near as good as the games. It doesn't come close in my book, so it's kind of hard to say.
And I'll give an honorable mention to the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Like, you know, it's a game that doesn't have really a huge narrative story to it. And they were doing like the live action animated crossover, which never works. And somehow out of all of that negativity, they pulled an okay movie.
I remember when they cast Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik, I was like, what? And then when they showed him, but then he worked. Like, he worked in the movie. I'm with you on that one, Betty.
Yeah, I agree. It was fine. There was all that public outcry. They remodeled the whole dude. I think Jim Carrey is kind of the star of that movie more so than Sonic, though. And that's a little bit of a problem.
Well, folks, those are our scary video game movies, or just video game movies, because they're scary how even the best of those is still terrible. But we are going into our non-spoiler and spoilery review of Five Nights at Freddy's, and we're going to be joined by Cousin Chris. Stay tuned.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them. Nightmare on Elm Street.
No! No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails, no one will survive.
Ah! Help me, please!
Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street, rated R.
Somewhere beyond the light and the dark, beyond our secret desires and deepest fears, lies the door beyond all our limits.
We have such sights to show you.
Hellraiser, there are no limits.
Rated R.
Welcome back, folks. And now on to our review of, I'm sure what will, time will tell, will be a classic Five Nights at Freddy's, based on a very, very popular video game series that originally was released in 2014. This movie, directed by Emma Timmy, scored huge at the box office. We talked about that earlier, but domestically, this movie brought in $80 million this weekend. And then also streamed, which we all agreed probably cost that studio at least $20 million in people like myself who watched it at home. But really kind of a lot of unnamed actors in this one, aside from Josh Hutcherson, and they dusted off a Matthew Lillard to play the villain in this movie. But if you've never played the game, if you haven't seen this movie, which you're tuning in, so I'm assuming you have, Five Nights at Freddy's takes place at like a Chuck E. Cheese type place where the animatronic android characters are all actually indeed haunted and killers. Josh Hutcherson plays a kind of down on his luck, haunted by a past occurrence in his life, security guard that's hired by Matthew Lillard's, we'll just call him job placement counselor, and to be the night watchman at Five Nights at Freddy's, or at Freddy Fazbear's. Now, what ends up happening, obviously, as you guessed it, the animatronics come to life and they don't necessarily try to kill him, and then they do, and then they don't, and we'll get into more about that spoiler-wise, but we are very excited to review this movie. Why? Because we have a living Viking himself, and that would be the one and only Cousin Chris. Cousin Chris, it's good to have you, buddy.
Thank you.
Now, JT told us that you're a big horror fan. Did this movie do it for you?
Honestly, I really want to call it horror. I mean, maybe more suspense. Like, you know, didn't fit the horror vibe for me.
Fair.
Okay.
I'll go along with that. What do you think of the movie? You like it? Not like it?
So, I mean, for me, I don't know nothing about the games. I know one of my kids is obsessed with the games, so I bought her all of them. And when she went to play it, she asked me to show her what to do because she had no idea. So one thing I know about the game is when I start for her, where you're just in some security room with the cameras. So the thing I like about the movie is I got a better idea of what it's all about. It kind of explained it to me. I mean, that's only if the movie's accurate. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? I don't know if the movie's accurate or not, but I like to at least give me a backstory. What the hell's going on here? Because in the game, all I know is you sit in front of a bunch of cameras and you're pressing buttons. That's it.
Yeah. Enough. That's about as much as I know about the game because that's what he told me.
I have played the game once, but I could. I like you, Chris, couldn't figure out what to do, and so just got eaten by Freddy. So,
yeah, but is that what the game is?
And then they snuck up on me.
So is that what it? You just sit in that room and you just play with the camera, shut and open doors. Is that all there is to it?
I honestly played it. I played it once, and when I say once, it was maybe for 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, like me.
Get the camera. Yeah, missed something and was dead. And it was like, well, okay, well, that's this game.
Yeah, I just handed it back to her. Here you go. Figure it out.
Yeah. Well, JT, how about you, buddy? What do you think of your non-spoiler thoughts of Five Nights at Freddy's?
Yeah, I definitely was going in not excited because, like my cousin here, I had no idea what the game was about. I basically asked him, because he told me you played it for a few minutes, and I was like, okay. From what I understood, it is not like Resident Evil or Silent Hill. It is not a game that is known for its story. It was just a game that was known to scare little kids, I feel like. Put them in a scary situation. So I was kind of surprised with how much this movie is dedicated to Josh Hutcherson, his backstory, the backstory of what happens to these, why these Chuck E. Cheese robotics are somewhat haunted. But I agree, it is very much a kid's gateway to horror films. This is something I think you could bring your kids to and not have to worry that they're going to have nightmares like Nightmare on Elm Street or get nightmares after watching Halloween or Child's Play. Yeah, if they can handle the video game, I feel like they can handle this movie. I feel like there's only one death, which we'll get into spoilers, that was actually pretty gruesome. Everything outside of that was more suggested, kind of happened off screen. And I overall didn't hate my time with the movie. I thought it was decent. It kept me engaged for the most part. I do think it's too long. I had the same complaint when I saw Saw X. Saw X didn't need to be 2 hours. This movie did not need to be 1 hour and 55 minutes. I think it comes at 1 hour 53, but anyway, I'm rounding up. 1 hour 55, not needed for this movie. For something that is such a simple plot that is just trying to scare you and have a decent time at the theater. I was kind of surprised how much this movie was about the night guard, Josh Hutcherson. Like, the first hour of this movie is just him, his backstory, his family situation, and everything that is going on around him. And the Five Nights at Freddy's is something he happens to kind of, walk into in a way. It's something that he does because he's trying to fulfill something that he needs to have done in his normal life. So when we get into spoilers, I'll definitely get a little more into the plot and some of the stories that they came up with to, like, I think make audiences a little more invested. But I saw us in the theater. We went and saw it in the theater together. I didn't hate my time in the theater. I was engaged for the most part, and I did think some of the story that was intercut with what was happening in the horror aspects was kind of interesting and, you know, kept me engaged throughout the film. So overall, not a bad time. Is it a great horror movie? No. Is it a great video game adaptation? Maybe, because I haven't played the game. But I will say this. I enjoyed my time in theater.
Benny, you're up, Slugger. What do you think about Five Nights at Freddy's?
I'm going to give you guys a very abstract description. This is the best way I can describe my experience of it. So, like, imagine you walk outside of your front door, and, like, someone just comes walking across the sidewalk wearing nothing but tape and playing a bugle really loudly. Mm-hmm. And then they stop to tell you about their childhood trauma, but you're too busy playing a game on your phone to really pay attention to them. But then as they're walking by, you realize that dude's wearing nothing but fucking tape. And so you start laughing to yourself. And so you don't really mind the whole experience. And it's just, okay, that was okay. That's how I felt about this movie. It was pretty much the exact same experience as that. It's definitely a training brawl movie for horror fans. Like, like if you're a horror fan and you want to indoctrinate your kid into horror movies but not traumatize them, I think this would be a good place to start for a 10-year-old or a tween to get them invested into the horror genre. But like I said, I watched this movie streaming and playing Yahtzee throughout this movie and just loosely paying attention to it was definitely the way to go. So I would say, like, if I went to the theater and had to pay solid attention to this bad boy for 2 hours, I would have probably have rather chewed glass. But sitting at home, half invested, it was an okay time.
Oh, Boos, I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
This movie. Okay. I'll say this. It was fine. And I'll save a little bit more for the spoilers, because there's a couple of things that happened in this movie that I'm just like, oh, come on, really? You did that? It was super predictable. Like, I knew, and I, again, not knowing, like, the lore. And apparently there is a ton of lore that goes into this game. Like, there's books. There's 4 or 5 different games for this. Like, I mentioned it earlier. On Friday night, I had, like, a 30-minute conversation with my niece where she's like, well, do you know about the Bite of 87? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, no, but she's super invested in this. And she was all about going and seeing this movie. So the movie's fine. Like, it is what it is. I mean, they obviously had to tell a lot about Josh Hutcherson, because how much can you stretch the Freddy Fazbear story? Like, the Five Nights at Freddy? It wasn't really 5 nights. It was like 2 nights. Like, he gets the job, and then the next night he shows up with his kid's sister, and that's it. Like, that's kind of the movie. So, I don't know. Look, for the source material, I will say this. Like, at least the characters looked really good. Like, they only invested $20 million into this, and, like, the characters looked scary enough, like the animatronic characters. So,
I believe Jim Henson was behind these animatronics, which is awesome to hear.
His company was, right?
Yeah, not Jim Henson's dead.
Okay, because that would be a whole other spooky movie. And I'll sign up for that one. I'll actually go and pay my money for the theater. Jim Henson's behind it. Chris had his hand up. We gotta unmute Chris here.
Oh no, you said 4 or 5. I seen there's 5 of them.
Oh, there's 5 of them. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I just bought my daughter the game, so 1 comes up 1 through 4, then 5 is that new one that came out.
Okay, so there's 5 games. So there's, like, a lore behind this. And I don't know, maybe it goes into more detail over the night. Watchmen in these games, I think it just is more kind of the history of these animatronics and the creators of it. And obviously we're going to get probably a second and third Five Nights at Freddy's, because this movie did gangbusters at the box office. Will I watch those movies? I don't know. It depends on how long this podcast goes and if I have to or not. But the movie was fine. Like I said, there wasn't anything that was like really groundbreaking to me. There wasn't anything that like gave me any type of jump scares. I saw everything like well in advance. I knew Matthew Lillard was going to be the bad guy. Spoiler. I knew that was his daughter. Spoiler. The cop was his daughter. Like, I called all of this stuff like out loud. And that's the other nice part about being able to watch this at home. As this things were happening, I would just be able to turn to my wife and be like, she's going to get bit in half. And then it would happen. Like, it was.
Wow. Well, I'll say this. I did not see the Matthew Lillard thing coming because you see him the very beginning. And I knew he was in on it because you could tell he was just trying to get fresh bait for the monsters or whatever you want to call them, the ghosts. But for him to be the father, like, what tipped you off that? Because I didn't see anything that tipped me off.
There were only three people in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but he wasn't. That's what I mean. The babysitter had more screen time than him. You know what I mean? Is he wasn't even in the movie. He was in it for that one scene in the beginning.
Yeah. So obviously, like, I knew he was the creator because he's offering the job, right? And then the cop, like, oh, I grew up around here. You know, she knew everything about that location. So it was like, okay, like putting two and two together. If he's the creator and she grew up there, father, daughter.
Nailed it. Did he say in the movie that he created that place?
No, but I could figure that out from his job interview and the way that he described the position.
I figured he was one of those guys that you go to that just, you know, one of those agencies where they just try to find you any job. Wasn't that his role? Wasn't he just a guy that's like, I'll find any job I can get you. You know, like one of those resource places. Is that what he was?
Yeah, he was a job placement counselor.
Okay.
That's for sure. But the way that he described the job, the way that like he takes that job to be able to prey on desperate people to come down and be the night watchman there.
Right? Chris, did you see it coming or am I the only one here?
I had no fucking idea.
Okay, well, good. So I'm not alone. It must have run in our family. We're gullible.
I mean, I knew the cop girl had something to do with it because she just had to know way too much shit, but I had no idea about that guy. It makes sense that part when he mentioned about we got the guy's last name, he just stopped and looked at him like, oh. Do you remember that part when he was like, oh, Mr., and he read his name, he just stopped and was like, oh. He's like, I'll give you this job. But yep, besides that, I saw nothing.
Benny, like did you see it coming?
The animatronics look good.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, as soon as the movie came on, I knew who the villain was. Like, there's Josh Hutcherson, his little sister, their aunt, okay? None of those can be the bad guy. You got the babysitter and her brother. They're both dead. They can't be the bad guy. So then you have the villain from Scream, who is only famous for being the villain in Scream. I figured he was probably the villain.
I guess, but like in my head.
Yeah, good point there.
Well, but the ghosts, ghosts are the villains. You know what I mean? The ghosts are the villains. He's only a villain because of Josh Hutcherson's background story. The odds of him being the same one that kills Josh Hutcherson's younger brother, I thought was like, I was like, come on, what's going on here? I thought it was creepier and scarier. The fact that we had no idea who did it and that he just had to live with the guilt of watching his little brother being taken away by it could have been anybody. And to me, that's a lot creepier than it being Matthew Lillard, who just happens to have done it to all these other kids who are now possessing these animatronic dolls.
If we can jump into spoilers now.
Oh, we're in spoilers, yeah. Moose, okay. Jump us in there earlier.
So, like, at the beginning of the movie when, like, Josh Hutcherson beats the shit out of a random guy in the mall, right?
Yeah.
That was a really good scene. Like, after he had that flat, I was like, okay, this may be, like, a dark, interesting movie. But after 10 more minutes, I realized it was a super shitty script. And that I should just assume the most obvious thing that could possibly happen is what's going to happen. So they just said, okay, there's four people on screen. We've eliminated the other ones. He'll be the villain. I agree with you. Had it just been like nobody and there were these things killing people and we never understood why, that would be a good horror movie. This clearly wasn't going to be that.
Wait. It took you 15 minutes to figure out that this was going to be a terrible script for this movie.
I Yes, yes. I had hope. I had hope for the first 15 minutes. Then it left.
Well, let me ask you this. Did the whole dream sequence stuff work for you guys? The fact that he kept going back to this traumatic event of his childhood, looking for details so he could try to find out what happened to his brother? So I think there's just something interesting there. I don't know if it's done well, but at least was something kind of interesting.
You know what? It reminds
me. It happened
me
too
of,
much.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I agree 100%. Like, he kept going back there, but then nothing in the dream sequence would change. So, like, if you remember the movie, the 80s movie, Flatliners, they kind of would do that thing where they would go to this dreamscape to try to find answers to what happens. He kept doing that, but instead of the dreamscape changing or, you know, things like that, nothing really happened. He just came back. He saw these kids. They looked creepy. Then he would wake up, and that's all that ever really happened with him.
I think it was dumb because he, like, he induced himself into, like, the same dream every single time. It would have been interesting if he wasn't aware of what he was doing, that he just had this reoccurring dream, and then the ghost kids showed up in it. I think that would have been a lot more interesting, aside from the fact where he's, like, trying to figure out his brother's murder by taking sleeping pills.
Yeah, like, it got to, so, like...
Didn't really work too much.
It started to feel like some Nightmare on Elm Street Dream Warriors shit going on. I was like, how much can you control your dream once you're inside of it? And then these kids coming in to visit him. There's some things in there I think that could have been interesting. It maybe just wasn't done as well as it could have been.
And another thing I don't think they ever really got into that was interesting is that his younger sister apparently can communicate with the dead, but they never really mentioned it did anything with it. He's just like, yo, you can draw pictures and communicate with the dead. That's great. You want a Coke?
Well,
I didn't even think about that.
I will say this. When they first encounter the talking, not talking, but moving ghost robots, you know, all the fuzzy characters, he seems to take it like not a big deal. Like, that's a life-changing thing to encounter. And he's like, I guess I'll bring my sister back here. I was like, come on. Well, that was a crazy night we had there, huh? Hanging out with those ghost machines.
Let me go back and take another sleeping pill.
Yeah.
While there's, like, crazy ghost machines running around.
There should have been more of a crazy reaction. Like, from what they're seeing, I would have been like, oh my God, what is happening? Like, burn that place down. I would have burned the place down after the first night with them inside.
I agree with you. The reactions in this movie are really, like, off. Like, you know, his sister can see the dead. You know, he can apparently control his dreams. There are dead children haunting these things, and my sister's out there playing with these murderous dead kids while there are corpses in the other room. But the only thing that gets a rise out of him is, like, this cop keeps waking him up when he's trying to sleep while he's at work. That's the one thing that gives him an emotional response.
And the way the Uber driver reacted, like, I got to get a new job. If a giant robot walked into your car with a little girl, I wouldn't just be like, all right, it's going to be a weird ride. And he just drives him there. It's like, come on, man. That guy would have ran out of the car and screaming.
There was a part where, like, okay, they've accepted that there's little kids in these, like, the spirits of little kids, like, inhabiting these animatronic robots, right? And then they go back and they play with them. They make a fort with them. And then they're all lying on the ground, like, in a circle. And these are, like, murderous little, like, ghost children inhabiting these, like, creepy-ass machines. And, like, that was the point in the movie where I was like, nope.
Well,
let's just fast forward until we get a little bit more action in this.
The weird thing is that it's revealed towards the end of the movie that he's also hiding the bodies in the animatronics. Because when they grab the little sister, they're, like, going to put her into the machine.
Yeah.
I believe the daughter said, like, they hid the bodies inside the animatronics. Like, what the F is that about?
Chris, you will notice the smell eventually.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of, like, dark content that was played, like, humorously in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, doesn't work. I think if you just go with the dark content, like... It's all dark content, like, enough. But I will have to say, we've touched on it earlier, but I'm going to say it again. We spent way too much time in Josh Hutcherson's dreams, and there was not enough time with the actual like animatronic like monsters. I think that would like that's your selling point of this movie. And don't get them where they're tickling the little girl or they're making a fort. Like, you're coming to see like murderous animatronic, like creepy, you know, killers. It just, it didn't work. Like, you only really got like two scenes of that actually being the case. And the rest of it, like the animatronic characters basically were played for like comedic, like elements in the movie. So yeah, the movie's not a horror movie at all. You guys are right. This is a training bra for horror movies. So if you want to ease into the world of horror, and I'm not a horror guy, this was too light for even me.
I'll say, like, for me, the one scene that actually felt like a horror movie was the scene where the people break in and trash the place,
yep.
Which actually makes no sense because they're trying to get him fired, but they're going to break in and trash it while he's not working. They're going to do it while he's like, what the hell? How does that make any sense? So that, but that scene is the only time where it really felt like kind of like a horror film. And yep. A little bit when the girl towards the end is running around, she's hiding in the balls, you know, the ball pit, and that freaking wolf looking thing, coyote, whatever the hell it was looking for her. So like I said, it is a training ground for horror films. Was it a fox? I thought it was a coyote. Fox. Okay. It was a fox. Well, let me ask Chris, was there any moments, what moment did this feel most like a horror film to you?
None of it. Maybe when they're like chopping people in half. I don't know. So to me personally, I think they just used the name of the video game to make the money. And like I said, how much of a movie can make off a game where you just sit in a room, pressing buttons, looking at TV screens. Yep. I think everything else they just threw in it just so they could make a movie. That's why it's all just kind of all over the place and just halftime made no sense.
Yeah, I agree.
100%. I mean, this movie will get sequels. Obviously, you saw that Matthew Lillard's character wasn't dead. And as they're killing him, he drops the line, "I always come back," leading to the idea that, well, maybe this isn't the first time that he's been killed off. So your guys's like thoughts, opinions, are you going to see the next Five Nights at Freddy's? Is it Six Nights at Freddy's? Take it away, Benny, your thoughts. Are you going to go see another Five Nights at Freddy's?
I don't mind it. I'm not going to pay to see one of these in the theaters at any point, like, you know, but like if the next one streams, I'll watch it on streaming, like around Halloween time. So I'll say this, like this movie is a lot like Friday the 13th, except when he finds like the fornicating teenagers, instead of killing them, he offers them a Gatorade and a pamphlet on safe sex. That's essentially what this movie is. And so, I mean, I think there's a place for it, but you know, it's not for me. What I am really curious to see is like the cinema score on this was really high for a horror movie, which is weird because I don't think it's a good movie, but like the people that this is hitting nostalgia for are people that are like between 8 and 22 right now. And so I wonder, like, if you have a really strong nostalgia connection to this movie, does it really hit for you? Like, none of us do, so we're just seeing it as like a subpar horror movie. But I wonder if those people this movie is hitting really, really different. And I think we will see, like, over the next couple weeks, if it has legs, we will know that the nostalgia is really hitting with this movie that we're not getting.
That's an excellent point. JTE, you're going to see Six Nights at Freddy's? You're going to continue your viewing pleasure of this movie?
I'll check it out because, like I said, I did like some of the backstory of Josh Hutcherson. Whether he will come back for the sequel, my guess would be yes. I think, you know, the villain kind of saying, "I'll be back." I just hope now that they've made the money, I don't think they'll go R-rated. I think they'll stick with the PG-13 because they want that PG-13 money. But maybe they'll take the training wheels off a little bit more with the sequel, Maybe they'll push the envelope a little bit farther. And I want to say this. I thought the movie was well directed. I thought the shot composition, the way the scenes were shot and constructed, I thought were actually pretty really well done. I'd like to see this director do some other films where she's not tied to this IP or this rating. I think she actually could do something really interesting given the right material. I think for what she had, she did a pretty good job. And because you know what? I'll probably watch it on Peacock. If I have A-list, I'll go see it in the theater. At least I'll know I'm not going to have a bad time. I'm going to have a decent time. And if they could do something interesting, I mean, for me, get a new security guard in there. What's their trauma? What's their story? Like, use this almost as a way to have a different security guard for every movie and have their backstory somehow interact with the kids / you know, Fozzie Bear killers. So I'd be interested in seeing that. I think if they have a good script and the same director, they could make something good.
Chris, after having seen the movies, are you going to join your daughter in playing that game?
I mean, yeah, that's one thing I like about the movie. Now I know what the hell my daughter's playing. Yeah, so I'm gonna take them all away from her. No, I'm just kidding. But I pretty much agree with Benny. It's basically like when me and Josh were kids, when the Ninja Turtle movie came out, because we loved the cartoon, we were like, oh, yeah. So maybe these, like you said, this younger generation, they're like, yeah, they loved it. Guys like us, they're older, just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So personally, I won't be seeing the other ones. I mean, whatever, if they're on TV or if I happen to be in LA at the time and he needs me on another podcast, obviously I'll watch it. But that's pretty much about it for me. I saw what I had to see.
Yeah, well, I'll echo all of that too. I'm in kind of in the same boat as everybody else. Like, yeah, hey, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. Do I care to learn more about the lore? Maybe. Like you said, JT, you've made the money. Maybe invest a little more in the story on the next one. Maybe give us like the origin and how he kind of started the whole thing. That might be interesting to me. But as far as like continuing Josh Hutcherson's story, it's fine. Matthew Lillard was the best part of the movie.
You know what? Set the sequel in the 80s. That would be kind of fun. A lot of movies are doing that these days. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Have the next security guard be a young Freddy Krueger. Like before he's dead. Like a prequel. Oh. So you get Five Nights at Freddy's leading into Freddy.
Technically, if it was a prequel, wouldn't it be like A Night at Freddy's? See what I did there? All in all, like, yeah, this movie was fine. I think it's going to continue to have legs at least through the Halloween season. So you've got another probably 2 weeks where this money will make its where this movie will make its money. It's already pretty much at this point in time done 100% of its budget. So it is definitely in the green as far as making money. But as far as the director coming back, I mean, like, Blumhouse is no idiot. He'll pump these out as many as he possibly can, and he'll pump them out cheap, and he'll turn a profit. That's just what he does. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as the rest of you guys. Like, I won't pay to see the movie in theaters, but if it streams, it streams.
Hey, on the plus side, this money maybe you could just throw into that new Spawn movie. Give it a little bit. Give it an extra $5-10 million. Let's get that Blumhouse Spawn movie out there and make it good.
Yeah, 40 more of these, and he can pay for those Exorcist rights.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, folks, we are going to wrap up. This wasn't a very long movie. This wasn't a very long episode, but it's Halloween. We want to wish everyone a spooky time, but also we want to thank our guest, Chris, the Viking himself. Thank you so much for being on the show, dude. You're welcome on any time. You look like I definitely do not want to pick a fight with you in an alley.
Or on a longboat.
I'm JTE's bodyguard.
Nice. I like it. He's the club of laying to JTE. Well, everybody, happy Halloween. If you're looking for a introduction to horror, go see Five Nights at Freddy's. We thank you all for tuning in. Happy Halloween. Bye.